first canto. That's the volume we're going to be. I have mine, but. So some of you have been with us for this weekend. We've been trying to cover one chapter from the first canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 13, Dhritarashtra quits home. Somebody get the feedback from the echoing or whatever it is. So, for those of you that haven't taken part, we'll just do a quick summary. For those of you that have, just a little review. We got as far as the description of Vidura returning to the royal palace. Vidura has gone on pilgrimage. While on pilgrimage, he met Maitreya Muni. Maitreya Muni, having heard directly from Lord Krishna, we can say he's a perfect candidate for passing on the message of transcendence and disciplic succession. Vidura received that message, and to the point of full spiritual realization. He's coming back. He's leaving as a wise member of the royal family, and one who's quite detached at that. And he's coming back as a sannyasi, as a realized soul, and he's coming with a mission, and a transcendental mission of relieving his elder brother from his illusion. And so he returns, there's a very wonderful reception in proper manner for cultured families to receive such a, he's a, called Krishna Devata. Practically he's received like a demigod and respected that way. And after getting himself situated again in the royal palace, he comes before the royal family. Yudhisthira, the elder of the royal family, the emperor of the world, he comes to place various kind words before Vidura and place some questions of him about his activities and his realizations and what he's learned, and getting news of the Yadu dynasty in Dwarka and so forth. So all of that exchange takes place. Vidura is patiently waiting for the right opportunity to fulfill his compassionate mission. And the verse that we ended up with, fittingly, because it fits in nicely with the very, very different position of Yudhisthira and Dhritarashtra. Yudhisthira read the verse text 16. Having won his kingdom and observed the birth of one grandson competent to continue the noble tradition of his family. So he's installed as the emperor. Maharishi Parikshit has been born. The name-giving ceremony, it's known. This descendant is fit to succeed the Pandavas to the royal throne. So his life is just quite the contrast of Dhritarashtra. He has become the emperor, and his son, his grandson, will become the next emperor. And he's living perfectly virtuously and righteously and religiously, reigning peacefully, enjoying uncommon opulence in cooperation with his younger brothers, who are all expert administrators to the common people. So this becomes important in the next section. The qualification of Yudhisthira Maharaj. So how the sadhu, in this case, Vidura, addresses the religious person, in this case, Yudhisthira Maharaj. And contrastingly, how the sadhu, Vidura, addresses Dhritarashtra. So the first verse of this next section is the theme of the section. It's the theme of the section is the instructions that a sadhu gives, and the instruction that the sadhu gives is summarized in this introductory verse. It's the message is one of nivritti. Nivritti is the removal of unwanted things that impede one in the path of achieving the goal of life. So, ideally, one should live one's life in such a way throughout life that nivritti is being cultivated. At the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, this first canto, same first canto, the idea is announced at the very beginning. Dharma projita kaitavotra paramo nirmatsaranam satam. So, paradharma, that's the message, that's the topic of Srimad Bhagavatam. And kaitava dharma, or this pravritti marg, is not the topic. It's declared. Da 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 da, at the very beginning. Hear ye, this Srimad Bhagavatam will not speak about how to become a worldly enjoyer. So if you're interested in worldly enjoyment, da 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 da, don't bother reading any further. Hear ye, hear ye. Because the Bhagavatam will not discuss that topic. The topic of the Bhagavatam is, rather, how to come to the supreme goal of Dharma, Paradharma. It's the proclamation. And in that purport, the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada makes this distinction, pravritti marg and nivritti marg. So we probably all have some idea what that is, but just for the sake of our topic, we'll go through it. Pravritti is that which comes, is something that comes in scripture. The part of the Vedas that we could say is very clearly pravritti marg is the karmakanda section of the Vedas. Karmakanda section of the Vedas, which deals with various yajñas and other types of religious observances that create auspiciousness or favorable condition so that one can become a better enjoyer in this world and in the next world. Pious enjoyment. Pravritti marg. And in contrast, nivritti marg is the path enunciated within the Vedas or other scriptures that advocates something very different. It advocates maximizing the ultimate spiritual attainment of life and meanwhile living one's life day to day, month to month, week to week, year to year, in successive passages of moments in such a way that those things that are worldly attractions are kept to a minimum, that which we require for a particular psychological condition and physical condition. We require certain things. Recognizing that psychophysical nature, we accept certain things, but we keep that at a minimum. And the strength for doing that and gradually reduce those things, even those minimum things, are corresponding to our degree of spiritual attainment. So that the objective is not Svargaloka, the objective is Vaikuntha Loka, very different place. Now, in our Western countries, that concept is not so clear in people's minds. The idea of heaven and the different place, the kingdom of God, is not very clear in people's minds. They have an idea of heaven, but it's a cloudy idea. It's like going to the best place possible. Something, whatever that is. That's what heaven is. and the promise of our ideologies of Western religion is you go to that place. So the Vedic picture is much more clear. Svarga Loka is in the created realm. Vaikuntha Loka is that place, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, which remains after everything is annihilated, including heaven, including hell, including this place. It's a non-created region. It's an eternal region where there's no need of sunlight, moonlight, or electricity, for example, Krishna says. There's nothing temporary about it. It's eternal, fully eternal. And Paradharma, or this path of Nivritti, is to achieve that. And you get there by little steps of attaching yourself to that supreme goal by the means, by Paradharma. So, Yudhisthira Maharaj is one who understood that. And that's very clearly expressed. As we go along, we'll point it out. This is kind of like a preview. Review and preview. Maharaj Yudhisthira understood that because his life was based upon attachment to Krishna. He only engaged himself in the Kurukshetra battle because it was indicated by the same Arjuna, very clearly, only for one reason. Krishna wanted it. Otherwise, he was perfectly prepared to not have anything to do with it. Quite in Dhritarashtra was just the opposite. Duryodhana, just the opposite. Krishna made some appeal, please, do something. So that this battle doesn't have to take place. No, battle must take place. Or we will not, give one village. We won't give the amount of land you can fit under the head of a pin to each of the Pandavas so that they can then perform their duty. So, this chapter is then advocating Nivritti, the message of a sadhu, which is the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, Dharma Projita Kaitavotra, the message of the Bhagavatam is the message of the sadhu, and the message of the sadhu is one should see very clearly that which is eternal, and as they say, go for it. And one should see very clearly that which is temporary, and one should manage oneself in that temporary realm very carefully, minimizing and ultimately doing without it. And Dhritarashtra is in that stage of life. He's in the final stage of life. So I'll read how Sutta Goswami introduces this topic before Vidura gets out his sword and starts cutting. So the topic is introduced this way. Insurmountable eternal time imperceptibly overcomes those who are too much attached to family affairs and are always engrossed in their thought. There are two, Prabhupada teaches this, Bhagavatam teaches this. In material consciousness there are two divisions. He says there's two psychic divisions. One is the conception of self, and the other division is what is mine. Aham, mameti. And the second is based upon the first. If I have a material conception of the self, that means if I think I'm this body, then what becomes mine, what falls into the category of mine, is extensions of this body. Extensions of this body include progeny, family members. Extensions of this body includes the work that one does and the fruits of that work, like wealth. And where I keep that wealth and where I keep those family members, home, and so forth. And extends, like concentric circles. It expands from that central thing, the conception of self. And so the root of the message of a sadhu is to address that misconception of self. So again and again we find in Prabhupada's teachings, and Krishna's teaching to Arjuna also, the essential mandate, and one has to understand practically, as Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, beyond practical realization, beyond the point where there is even a chance. This is 241 Bhagavad Gita purport. One should understand the proper conception of the self to the degree that there's no longer a chance to be engaged in fruitful activity, to be engaged according to misconception of self. The proper conception of the self is, I'm spirit soul, part of Krishna. Misconception of self is, I am this body. And therefore, what I do with this body, it's produced from this body, and therefore it's mine. I become attached to the fruits of my work. That's binding. And not only binds one to karma, it karmatma kanyena sharira bhanda. It colors one's consciousness. It puts one in the modes of nature. You can't see what's what. You're seeing through filters. And so you see something, even it's pointed out. This is one of the defects of the conditioned soul, is subject to illusion. You see something that isn't. Like the classic is, when you look at a rope, you see a snake. That's the classic one. And then the sadhu says, there's a rope. But the conditioned soul sees, there's a snake. And therefore, we discussed that in our class this morning. When one hears from the Mahajans, like Shukadev Goswami, who is narrating Srimad Bhagavatam, or the spiritual authorities, we can see things properly. We have perfect knowledge of things if we hear from those who aren't seeing through filters, those who have the proper conception of self and have the right understanding of what's mine. What's mine is nirmama, that's what's mine. Nothing is mine. But everything that I was thinking was mine is actually the property of Krishna. There is a proprietor. The Supreme Lord is the proprietor. And then I conduct my life accordingly. So, if I don't conduct my life accordingly, then what follows is another kind of attachment. Besides the cultivation of attachment to Krishna, if that's neglected, what other attachment will be there? Well, mama will be there. Attachment to mine. That's what will be there. And that was the case of Dhritarashtra. Particularly, it's being pointed out that he was very attached to his family members. And the point that's being made is Dhritarashtra didn't see an alternative. Another one of the defects, there's four defects of the conditioned soul. One example is you see something and you identify it incorrectly. The rope is seen, you think it's a snake, or vice versa. Another is you just can't see something at all. This is, in the Sanskrit for this one is Brahma, Bhrama. Just like we've all had the example or had the experience, we're looking for our wallet or car keys or some important thing. We just can't go without that one thing we have to have. And we're looking and looking and looking, and we can't find it. We're tearing our hair out. Where is it? We ask somebody, they say, I saw it. It's right over on your dresser. It's right over, I saw it, I'm sitting by the chair. And you go over and you look and you just look at the chair, and it's not, I don't see it. And they come over and they pick it up right where it was and hold it, there it is. So that's another one of the defects of the conditioned soul. Something is there and you just can't see it. Another is cheating. You see it and you report, I didn't see it. It's another defect of the conditioned soul. But just this one is, not seeing what's there. So this was Dhritarashtra's defect. He didn't see that he had an alternative. All he knew was, I wanted to be the king. After all, I'm a Kshatriya, so I want to rule. But by some misfortune, I was born blind. I should have been the king, but I couldn't be the king. So my younger brother, Pandu, he became the king. And I was really agitated in my mind. But then when he died young, I got a little boost. I could temporarily be the king, at least in that position of honor, while the Pandavas were growing up. Anyway, we know all the intrigue. His mind was attached to that position, and when it failed, his sons were killed, and his hopes were smashed. But he didn't see the alternative. He didn't see the car key. He didn't see the wallet. He didn't see the other thing that the sadhu knows is there. He just couldn't see it. He couldn't see it because he was attached. And this is the nature of attachment. Attachment, in this case, he's saying, Sutta Goswami is saying he's attached to his family members. He didn't have the cultivation of the progressive value of this human existence. He lost out because of that attachment, and that's all he had at the end, was attachment. So let me read some of the wonderful instructions, a little bit, the wonderful instructions that Prabhupada gives. And there's two main points in what I'm going to read. One is, again, this the contrast between Yudhisthira and Dhritarashtra. The instructions that are given, Prabhupada says specifically here, these instructions apply to Dhritarashtra. They weren't needed for Yudhisthira because he was already there. He was already at the point of attached to Krishna, and therefore he was already at the point of being detached from illusion. He was detached from illusion. Just see, when Yudhisthira got notice that Krishna had left the planet, he didn't have to have Vidura come and tell him, leave. He left. He first made sure that the kingdom was in proper care by his grandson, Parikshit. He knew the quality of Parikshit by proper astrological calculation. He knew he was a qualified heir to the throne. He left. He didn't tell anybody. He just left. Detachment was already there. But he was ruling religiously and in the mood of, I'm only doing this for one reason, because Krishna wants me to do it. I had a discussion with one godbrother, Amarendra, the other day, he has a very difficult service. He's a lawyer, and he has to get involved in things that are dealing, he's a First Amendment lawyer, and it gets into really sticky matters sometimes, between this and that, and I had some purpose to communicate with him. I was just commenting, I don't know how you do what you do. He said, you have a very, very difficult service because you're in between persons who you care about very much, and it sometimes gets very, very sticky, and even on both sides, persons you care about very much. He said, well, I'm glad somebody appreciates it. Then he got into this, launched into this, like, you know, what he lives by. What he lives by is this. I'm only doing what I'm doing because I know that Prabhupada wanted me to do it. He said, otherwise, I'd be out of here in a second. And imagine, here's a man he's in his 50s. He's very intelligent. He could do whatever he wants to do. He's very talented. He has his financial thing together. He's going through ordeals in life because some years back, he met a sadhu, a pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada, who changed his heart, and years later he's going through ordeal after ordeal after ordeal after ordeal after ordeal after ordeal for one reason. Because Prabhupada wanted him to do it. It's probably not that Prabhupada wanted to have ordeals in his life. but he wanted someone who was responsible to take up that post and protect the society, which is what Yudhisthira Maharaj was told by Krishna and told by Bhishma Dev. You have to do this. This is Krishna's plan. People are depending upon you for their protection. So stop this lamenting and perform your duty, because Krishna wants you to do it. So that attachment, chapter 5 of Bhagavad Gita, explains in the beginning, Krishna explains that attachment to the Supreme is actually the essence of what detachment from temporary is all about. What real detachment from matter is attachment to Krishna, attachment to the Supreme. And the converse, those that are not attached to the Supreme will be attached to matter. So, here's Prabhupada's language. It's two paragraphs. He discusses the illusion of the attached person, not understanding, basically not understanding the goal of life, and being dragged here and there by those attachments. Then the next paragraph he says, illusion cannot work on one who is awake in the devotional service of the Lord. And he gives the example of Maharaj Yudhisthira, who was attached to Krishna, so he was detached from illusion, and illusion couldn't act on him. So therefore, Maharaj Yudhisthira had no attraction even for such comforts of life as are available in the kingdom of heaven. Because even the happiness obtained on the planet Brahmaloka is also temporary and illusory. Because a living being is eternal, he can be happy only in the eternal abode of the kingdom of God, Paravyom, from which no one returns to this region of repeated birth and death, disease and old age. So then this is what I highlighted, this following part. Therefore, any comfort of life or any material happiness which does not warrant an eternal life is but illusion for the eternal living being. This is nirvritti. This is the message of nirvritti. The person who's on the path of nirvritti knows well that those things that are temporary are illusory, and they're not going to help me come to the position of the eternal abode of the Lord. Therefore, I may religiously take up these things, like Yudhisthira was religiously taking up his duty. I'll religiously take up these things, because it will purify. Like in the beginning of the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asks the question, what is the essence of renunciation? Because that's what this topic is, renunciation. What's the essence of renunciation? Krishna says, that's a very good question. A lot of people have a lot of things to say about it, and they contradict one another. So now I'll tell you, finally, conclusively, what is the principle of renunciation? And then the very first thing he says is that whatever is purifying to one's existence, that should not be renounced, in the sense of given up. Like Yudhisthira Maharaj is being told by Bhishma Dev, don't give up your duty, because Krishna wants you to do it. It will purify you, it will protect the citizens, therefore don't renounce it, do it. So each of us has duties to perform similarly, where it will purify our existence, and we should do those religiously, but we should maintain very clearly this nirvritti path or goal. The purpose of that religious performance is it will help us to get to that supreme position. In and of itself, it's not going to get us to the supreme position, but it will create an atmosphere in our life, in our consciousness, that when we hear the message of Vidura, when we hear the message of a sadhu who is in touch with transcendence, it will go deep into the heart. And it will help attach us to Krishna, to the goal. So religiously we do, but we're not attached to those things, even the religious performances of things, the religious execution of duties of things. This is the message. This is what Vidura is giving to Dhritarashtra. One who understands this is factually learned, and such a learned person can sacrifice any amount of material happiness to achieve the desired goal known as Brahma Sukham, or absolute happiness. And Prabhupada just amplifies that statement this way. Real transcendentalists are hungry for this happiness. Same idea, just turning the volume up. They're hungry for this happiness. And as a hungry man cannot be made happy by any and all comforts of life, minus foodstuffs. If you're hungry, someone can offer you, you want to watch television. This audience television isn't so, whatever something is attractive. Would you like to not eat, but you know, go to the park? No. Offer anything. Like Prabhupada gives the example, put a fish out of water, offer him anything. He just, your one thing will make him happy. Put him back in the water. That's all. So we need to, same for us, we need to be in that atmosphere that's conducive for who we are. Water is the atmosphere for the fish, and the spiritual atmosphere is the proper position for the soul. Food for the hungry man, and being in the spiritual position. So the soul needs to be placed, that's the idea, the soul needs to be placed in that spiritual position. Transcendentalists who know temporary things, okay, if they're there, and if they're not there, okay. And all those things that I do have, I religiously deal with them. But I want this, I want contact with the Supreme. I want my consciousness to be in contact with the Supreme Being. That's what I want. Nothing else will satisfy. So that such persons are eager, very hungry for that happiness. And as a result, offer them material happiness that doesn't have something to do with that spiritual position. No thank you. No thank you, no thank you. Unlimitedly, no thank you. Prabhupada glorified one of our devotees. Maybe some of you know him because he's visited here, Giriraj Maharaj. Some of you know the story. Giriraj Maharaj's parents are quite wealthy. Very, very wealthy. So the first temple I joined was in Boston, and Giriraj Maharaj was already a brahmachari, initiated brahmachari. And Prabhupada, this was in 1970, Prabhupada called for some, from one devotee from each temple to be sent in America, to be sent to India, because he was going to go to India and start Krishna consciousness in India. So they wanted the strongest devotee in each temple. That was a big sacrifice. You send the strongest devotee. Imagine if we had to do that here in Chicago, we'd be finished. Anyway, send the strongest devotee. So Giriraj Maharaj was selected from the Boston temple, and he trained me in each of the services that he was doing. I was just brand new bhakta, and I had to do all the things that this very responsible devotee was doing. And he went to India, and when it came to setting up the Radha Rasa Bihari temple in Juhu, he was selected as the president. And he was, as a young man, given sannyas by Prabhupada. And he received in the mail one letter from his father, "You leave the Hare Krishna movement, I'll give you $1 million. You renounce this, here's the example." And Giriraj Maharaj wrote a letter back to his father, I respect you very much and appreciate your kind thoughts about me, but no thank you. Imagine. And Prabhupada was delighted. I mean, not that, but he would speak to the members who were coming to the Juhu temple at the very beginning. Just see this young man. There's no amount of material enjoyment that he's prepared to sacrifice just so that he can come and live as a sadhu, serving serving Radha Rasa Bihari and serving in the Hare Krishna movement here in India. $1 million, bribery. I mean, someone might have, but he's a person of integrity too. He could have said, "Oh, sure, I'll take $1 million, stay with you for a while, and go back to Juhu and start a second temple." But he's a person of integrity. He said, "No, I can't do that. Not for any millions of dollars. I can't do that." So this exemplifies this point. So once again, Yudhishthira understood that. He was prepared to forego anything if it meant the satisfaction of Krishna. And Dhritarashtra just didn't even see that option. So here comes Mahatma Vidura to the rescue. I'm going to read the verses and we'll discuss just a little bit. Mahatma Vidura knew all this. This is that invincible time takes away everything from everybody. And the persons who are attached, overly attached to their material affairs and family and so forth, don't see the hand of time coming and taking things away. Therefore he dressed Dhritarashtra as follows, "My dear king, please get out of here immediately." That's where he started. "Get out. Just see how fear has overtaken you." And Prabhupada comments, he dressed him as king in a facetious manner. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, in the 13th chapter, Bhagavad Gita, the living entity is addressed as Purusha. Purusha Prakriti Stohi Bhunkte Prakriti Jan Gunan. Living entity isn't Purusha. Living entity is Prakriti. But when Prakriti thinks, when the living entity who is part of Prakriti but still Prakriti, an energy of God, thinks, "I'm the enjoyer, I'm the energetic, I'm all powerful," then he's the so-called Purusha. He's the imitation Purusha. He's the Pondraka Vishnu. Paste on an extra four arms and become, extra two arms and become Vishnu. And declare yourself to be God. So he's the so-called king, so-called controller. The king must be obeyed. But the king, Dhritarashtra, could not check the forces of time. He couldn't check old age, he couldn't check disease, nor could he check death. So-called king of all that I survey. And he's saying, just see how fear has overtaken you. So anticipating, Prabhupada explains this. He knows, Vidura knows his brother very well. Very well. So Dhritarashtra is going to propose, "Vidura, you're very wise. You've always helped me." You know, puffing him up a little bit. "So please make an arrangement so that I don't have to die. That I can overcome time. Please, you figure it out for me. You're the best counselor around." So anticipating that he might say that, the next statement that Vidura makes is this. "This frightful situation cannot be remedied by any person in the material world. My Lord, it is the Supreme Personality of Godhead as eternal time, Kala, that has approached us all." Now remember, it's not only that Dhritarashtra is old. Vidura is also old. They're brothers. He's the elder brother, but he's also very old. He lived his whole youth. He lived in the royal palace for some time. He was married. He had that royal opulence for some time. He went on pilgrimage from some 30, 35 years. He's also up there. So old age is approaching. And as Prabhupada writes, old age is the notice of the arrival of death. So some of us are starting to get our gray hairs. Some of us are starting to get functions of the body that don't work anymore. Prithu? Some of us. And it's notice. What Prabhupada writes further is very nice. "No one can refuse to accept either summon calls," so sometimes that happens, there's a court proceeding, but they have to issue the summons. Like, you know, if you're a parking ticket, it's just this, it goes right on your windshield. But sometimes there's something besides like a parking ticket, and there's, they have to, I don't know what their legal terminology is, but they have to, you have to be summoned to appear in court. So some, eternal time. Time rules all. That's what he's telling him. Dhritarashtra, there's no escape. You also have to submit. I also have to submit. Yudhisthira also has to submit. We all have to submit. But you're thinking, I don't have to submit. You have to submit. That's the message. There's no alternative. The conclusion of this purport, again, just appreciating Prabhupada's language. Wherever there is the influence of eternal time, there is the set of tribulations, namely birth, death, disease, and old age, and all of them are invincible. Janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, dukkha, dosha, anudarshanam. I had one student, I was shocked. I went to DeKalb this week, and one student, 21-year-old student, said, I think about this all the time. Life is very short. They're 21. They're in their, you know, zoom, 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 vigor, vitality, having a, you know, everybody else is running around having a great time. They said, I think about this all the time. Life is very short. And death may happen tomorrow. And where is my consciousness? Where is that happiness of life that I've never experienced?
Did he say about consciousness?
Huh?
Did he say about consciousness at that point?
They knew what the birth, death, disease, and all that. They didn't know Bhagavad Gita.
Uh-huh.
They never read Bhagavad Gita. Just had this intuitive sense. You know? But they didn't know, like a little bit like Dhritarashtra, they didn't have a clear idea of what the alternative was. They said, you know what, it was just remarkable. They said, you know what, I really need guidance. But I'm such a stubborn person. I don't take it. It's like, like Bharat. Stuck. Knowing that that's needed, knowing the problem is there, that's a big step. Most people don't know. Or they just close their eyes like your son was doing yesterday. Looking around like that with his eyes closed. That's the same, this Brahma. You look, where's the car key? I don't see it. You have to have a car key to start the car. I know, but I don't know where it is. I can't find it. Anyway, so like that, in life, not seeing, and that message of one requires, this is the message of the whole chapter, one requires the association of sadhu to get that message, because sadhu is the authorized distributor of such knowledge. They have an exclusive distribution rights of such knowledge. One can't discover it on one's own. What one can discover on one's own is I need to find such a person who can help me in that way. Vidura understood it. He found Maitreya. Maharaj Yudhisthira understood it. And he had Narada's association and also Vidura's and so many wonderful personalities association, because he understood he needed, even he was perfectly righteous, he needed that sadhu sangha. Dhritarashtra didn't understand it. And so he was just being swept away by time without seeing, I'm being swept away by time. That's the point that's being made. Text 20. Whoever is under the influence of Supreme Kala must surrender his most dear life. What to speak of other things such as wealth, honor, children, land, and home. Now there's five items mentioned here, and these are things that are very dear to materialists. Wealth, honor, just I met somebody yesterday who's just been in America for 3 years from India, and already he's the chairman of something or other. He's in this honored position. But that's a trick of Maya. If one thinks, yes, now I'm on top. Everything's okay. It's just like rocking a child in a cradle. So it seems like everything is okay, but everything's not okay. Everything's not okay. This wealth, honor, family, land, home, those things, we may engage in those things in our dutiful, religious, and proper way. That's okay. But all of that's going to be taken away, including our own life. And therefore, what effort have we made during our life to take shelter of the eternal? This is the message of Nivritti that's being passed on. Your father, so he gives him now factual evidence. Your father. Who is the father of Dhritarashtra?
Vichitravirya.
Your father, so Vichitravirya died when Pandu and Dhritarashtra, when they were very young, Vidura, they were still young boys, and Vichitravirya died. So he's saying, your father, the following people are gone. Your father, your brother, so Pandu's gone, well-wishers, and sons, they're all dead and passed away. You yourself have expended the major portion of your life. Your body is now overtaken by invalidity, and you're living in the home of another. In other words, you don't have vitality in your body to even maintain your body. You're being maintained by others who have vitality. Wake up and see what's happening. Life is slipping away. This summons call is letting you know your days are about finished. Then he starts getting heavier. If some of the famous lines are coming up. You have been blind from your very birth, and recently you have become hard of hearing. Your memory is shortened. Your intelligence is disturbed. Your teeth are loose. Your liver is defective. And you're coughing up mucus. These are all signs. Fading of the memory in old age. Kind of feeble-minded thing. It's not... We laugh about it, but you know, where do we have to go through that? We, you know, what room am I in? Who are you? And what day is it? They're just basic things. The functions of the mind, the functions of the body, the coughing up mucus. These all happen. Alas, how powerful are the hopes of a living being to continue his life? Now here's the heavy one. Verily, you're living just like a household dog and eating the food given by Bhima. So who's the one who took the life of Duryodhana? Bhima. And so you're sitting at the table like a dog takes scraps off the plate of the master. So Bhima is eating, and whatever's left, you take the scraps from Bhima's plate. He killed your sons. And he's humiliated, because you know, nothing like a Kshatriya to hear such words, what to speak of anybody else. So how is he getting away with this? There's three reasons why we can't do what Vidura. We shouldn't now go back to our relatives and family members and start speaking like this. He was able to do this for several reasons. One, again, the beginning thing is, he's speaking this way for Dhritarashtra's sake. He was able to do this because he's a pure devotee. Like things that Prabhupada did and things that Prabhupada said, he told us, you cannot do this. And Prabhupada could do because he was elderly, one, he was pure devotee. He had spiritual potency to say and do things that he said and did. So we can't imitate such activities. But Vidura was self-realized, and in fact, another point is what he was the brother and actual well-wisher of Dhritarashtra. This is another thing that is important for us to know when we can and when we can't give instruction or even good advice. The other person who we're giving good advice to must know that we are their well-wisher. If someone, just think about it, just common sense in life, if you hear from someone who you know is your well-wisher, and you hear the same thing from another person who you're not really sure if they're your well-wisher or not, you're going to certainly hear it more openly from the one who you know is your well-wisher. They've demonstrated again and again and again they're just your well-wisher. And such person can bring in strong words that's beneficial, helpful. So Dhritarashtra knew that Vidura was his well-wisher. And another, it's going to come in the next section, but a third point is that actually Dhritarashtra was exalted. Personality. You see, but how he responded, he's an exalted personality. That exaltedness was covered by his attachments and made him bad behavior, very bad behavior, horrible behavior due to attachment. So the sadhu has this task, his service or assignment, his duty is to help persons break those attachments, cut those attachments, so that they can come to the liberated position. Again, he didn't speak the same way to Yudhisthira. Get out of here immediately. He didn't say that to Yudhisthira. You stay in your position. Dhritarashtra, you get out of here. Because we're going to hear, there are different, we'll just mention this. There are three different stages of renunciation. This nivritti takes three different types or forms of detaching oneself. Just mention them. The Sanskrit names that are given are Dhira, Sannyas, and Paramahansa. So Paramahansa is the ideal one. Or Narottama is also mentioned in this chapter. So the Narottama, or the Paramahansa, that's the position of a very, very exalted soul who is completely attached to the Supreme Lord. And that's the ideal. That's what one should live one's life and strive for that, even in the present situation of life. By hearing the messages, sthanes tatak shruti gatam tanuvan manobhir, one should stay in one's position while taking great care to hear the message of transcendence and carefully avoiding fruitive purposes of life on the material side, fruitive attachments and speculative knowledge, but hearing while staying in that position, one's present. So cultivating throughout one's life leads one to that attached to the Supreme, which is the Uttama position. That's the ideal standard of detachment from this world. And the going backwards now, the sannyas stage, that's the stage that that Vidura had taken up. He left home and just went to purify himself to different pilgrimage places. When he met Maitreya and heard from him, he then became Paramahansa. And in the beginning stage is this Dhira. Dhira means undisturbed. So Prabhupada explains it this way. This is what basically Vidura was recommending for Dhritarashtra. Just get out of here. Recognize the illusion that you're in. Wake up. Recognize the illusion that you're in. And since you haven't cultivated things properly, just out of fear of that which has captured you in your illusion, leave it. Just leave it. So, even out of fear or out of disgust, not with deep attachment for anything spiritual. Dhritarashtra didn't have that. He was religious in one sense, but he wasn't deeply spiritually attached. So that's what's being advocated for him. There's no need to live a degraded life and subsist on the charity of those whom you have tried to kill by arson and poisoning. You also insulted one of their wives and usurped their kingdom and wealth. He's giving a list of his... It's not just his bad dealings, but the results. Bad dealings are the result of strong attachment. It's inevitable. Strong attachment is going to bewilder the mind. And in that bewildered state of mind, one will opt for things that shouldn't be done. Just see where this attachment has gotten you. Give that up. Give up. So this is the sadhu's message to the attached person. Give up your attachment. Just a couple more verses and we're done. Despite your unwillingness to die and your desire to live even at the cost of honor, remember, he's a kshatriya. This is heavy language for kshatriya to hear. Your desire to live even at the cost of honor and prestige, your miserly body will certainly dwindle and deteriorate like an old garment. Now here introducing this term dhira. He is called dhira, undisturbed, who goes to an unknown remote place and, freed from all obligations, quits his material body when it has become useless. How does one... So in these three categories, dhira, sannyas, and paramahansa, all three of them require an advanced soul to help us come to that position. The classic example from the Vedic picture is somebody who's in a well, in the bottom of the well, and they're stuck. Unless somebody who's not in the well comes along, you can't climb out of a well. So if somebody comes along and lowers a rope, grab onto the rope, here it comes. Then you just have to grab onto the rope. You don't even have to do anything other than grab onto the rope and you get pulled right out of the well. Just grab onto the... So the rope is compared to good instructions from the Vidura-like personalities, the sadhu-like personalities. One just has to tightly hold on to those instructions. That means to execute those instructions, to live by those instructions, and all good will come. And certainly at each of the stages, and particularly being emphasized in Prabhupada's purport, is to become a pure devotee of the Lord. It's made possible by such association of a pure devotee of the Lord. Two more verses. He is certainly a first-class man who awakens and understands, either by himself or from others, the falsity and misery of the material world, and thus leaves his home and depends fully on the personality of Godhead residing within his heart. The Sanskrit, the first line, Yaksvarat Paratak Deha. There's a similar Sanskrit used in Brishabdev's instructions. No. In Prahlad Maharaj's instructions. Where he says that if a person maintains the material conception of life, this is the message just coming from Prahlad instead of from Vidura. Same message. If a person maintains a material conception of life, there's no way that they can be elevated either by their own efforts or by the help of others or a combination of the two. Hold on to your material conceptions of life. You will not progress spiritually by what you do or others helping you or a combination of the two. And this is saying it in reverse. The first class man is one who does give up that material conception of life, and then by either method, by his own efforts or the help of others, they can come to this first class position, being fully aware, fully dependent upon the personality of Godhead, living one's life in that consciousness. So, hello, Dhritarashtra. Give up your material conception and take the spiritual conception. See this alternative, just like there's the car key. There it is, the spiritual conception, Dhritarashtra, the spiritual conception. Your body's finished. Your hopes of becoming the king, it's long gone. Take the spiritual conception. Do yourself a favor. Take it. Do the right thing. For once in your life, do the right thing. Now, in the purport, Prabhupada says some very heavy things. I found them, in fact, startling. Two things. The part that's not startling is the standard thing. He says that one should stay in one's home. The message for Dhritarashtra, the message for Yudhisthira, stay in your position, continue being the emperor, and stay attached to Krishna. Dhritarashtra, get out of here and attach yourself to the ultimate purpose of life. So what Prabhupada writes is, one who desires material benefit from devotional activities can never depend upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although he's situated in everyone's heart. That's heavy. Stated slightly differently, if you recognize there should be some religious part to my life, some spiritual part to my life, so let me engage in devotional service. That's the spiritual part of my life. But I'm not even going to pay attention to this material conception I have of who I am, or the attachments that come from that material conception of who I am. I'm just going to do the spiritual thing and kind of sandwich it in with everything else. So what Prabhupada is saying is, one cannot depend upon the Lord in that condition. It's just kind of like an add-on. It's seen as another material, good material thing to do, a pious thing to do. So that's one of the offenses against the chanting of the holy name. So one should not think like that, because one then can't place oneself in a dependent position upon Krishna. Then he says something heavier. Nor does the Lord give any direction to persons who worship him for material gain. That's heavy. There's the verse in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Kesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajitam Bhitti Purvakam Dadami Buddhi Yogamtam. So that's what he's speaking about. Giving direction means the direction how to come to him, how the direction to come to that Paramahansa or Nara Uttama position. Krishna certainly gives direction. Here's how you can be pious. Here's how you can be charitable. Here's how you can do righteous things. He gives intelligence even to the thief how to steal. He'll give intelligence to the pious person how to be pious. He gives intelligence to the cat how to get the milk from the kitchen. Prabhupada gives that example. Wait till the housewife leaves the kitchen. Now you go up on the counter and lick up the milk. Intelligence comes from Supersoul to do that. But this ultimate intelligence that Krishna gives, he reserves for those who are serving him without material motive. So it's very important to come to cultivate that position of coming to the Supreme Lord without material motive. To get there, Bhagavatam is teaching us we need sadhu sangha. We need sadhu sangha to come to that position. And the final verse, please therefore, so this is the last epithet of Vidura, please therefore leave for the north immediately without letting your relatives know, for soon that time will approach which will diminish the good qualities of men. So he's telling him, don't
like the positive way that Prabhupada put it is, he's instructed when there's something that is auspicious, and there's some inspiration to do that auspicious thing, do it at once. With something that's material, you might have to calculate, when is a good time, when should I make my investment, or when should I arrange for this particular ceremony, when's an auspicious time for the what place, what circumstance. You may have to consider time, place, circumstance, so many things for material events. You do have to consider those things. But for transcendental events, they should be done at once. It's something, some inspiration to do like that. So, that's the kind of, and the opposite is don't wait. That's what Vidura is telling Dhritarashtra. And I can see that you're responding to these words that I'm speaking, so strike while the iron is hot. That's what, another phrase that Prabhupada says. It's like the blacksmith gets the bellows going, the fire becomes very hot, and the iron's in the fire. Now the iron is red hot. That's when, strike when the iron is hot. So do it now, Dhritarashtra. Go to the north. This north means go to Rishikesh, Haridwar. Go to where the saintly persons are engaging themselves in their simple austerities for the specific objective of detaching themselves from worldliness and attaching themselves towards the goal of life. So it's this very momentous, nice instructions and momentous moment in Dhritarashtra's life. It actually strikes him and he does it. So we'll continue later today with Dhritarashtra's response. So, any comments or discussion on what we went over? Questions? Huh? Something? Huh? Okay. Yes.
In this instance you just described, Vidur comes and tells Dhritarashtra that the time has come.
Yeah.
But in common man's life, that doesn't happen very often. How one should know that the time is ripe, like the iron is hot, and to take up that position to renounce?
Well, better in our, we have good fortune in that we have saintly association and opportunities now to cultivate that capacity, not just to renounce, but to attach ourselves to the Supreme. And there are a number of persons that I know with families that they're actively considering, not just within their mind privately, but in their family discussions, what the arrangements will be for that to happen. And there's a standard Vedic formula. If we were doing things in that cultivating progressively throughout life, the standard indication that Prabhupada has given is in our at 50 or midlife, and the idea is when the children are grown and they can maintain themselves and they can take care of their own affairs and they can take care of the wife properly and they understand religiously to do that, and they're very affectionate to their loving mother and they're prepared to do that, then that's the stage. That's the standard Vedic way That's when the iron is hot. Our responsibilities, religiously executed, have been fulfilled. So one should not then linger in the comforts of those arrangements that we've created with our hard labor. We should go forward for the next stage of life. There's one very curious dialogue in one family that I know, Anutama and his wife, Ram Tulsi. Not the communications Anutama, but the other one. He's American, his wife is from Mauritius, and they have two children. Last time I was visiting at their home, Newton was saying, "Yeah, my wife, I'm getting ready." You know, it's open discussion in the household. "I'm getting ready for the stage of sannyas." And his wife was in the kitchen. He said, "And she tells me, if you don't leave me, I'm leaving you." He said, you know, and she came out with a spoon and said, "Yeah, I told him that." He said, "We've done everything. We've earned our livelihood and we've trained our children. They're, you know, doing nicely in school, and you know, they're not ready to take that stage just yet because their son is still in high school and the daughter is still in college. But it's open. It's in, you know, it's, and it's lighthearted." He said, "We've done everything." So, and now we have to do the next thing. We fulfilled our household duties religiously and Krishna consciously. So now we should do the next thing religiously and Krishna consciously. Then I'll be okay. I have everything I need. But it certainly helps when the wife is spirited in that way. That's the best way to prepare ourselves. The best way to know when the iron is hot is that we prepare ourselves, and when it's there, we know. Krishna will, just like what's stated here, Krishna will teach us, Krishna will instruct us, and scriptures giving that indication too. Monica?
Well, my question was that you mentioned that Vidura was able to speak heavily and urgent moods with Dhritarashtra.
Yeah.
One of the reasons being that Dhritarashtra actually is an exalted personality and handle these instructions. But most people in the world aren't.
Most people aren't.
So then how should people be spoken to? Assuming, and I'm not talking about young people because you've got years to bring them through the step-by-step process.
Yeah.
But people who are over the hill, as they say, you can't speak urgently with them. There's not time to speak.
Well, it takes. Each of us have relationships with others, so we have responsibility unto one another to speak. In other words, where those relationships are strong, and not just in a material way, but in a Krishna conscious way, we can then. We're then in a position to speak. And it may, you know, such things. I mean, I've had such heavy, not this particular thing, but some heavy things said from people who I have very close relationship with, you know, this. And it's wonderful to hear from those. I'm making the same point as I made earlier, and vice versa. If we establish relationships, I mean, just like the people that you, the circuit of people where you go and preach, I'm sure that there are people who recognize that both you and your husband are not. You have one purpose. You're not, you know, interested in your material accumulation program in life. You're interested in a spiritual purpose of life. And, you know, that's how they know you. And as you deal more and more and more and more and more and more with such persons, a relationship of confidence and trust, and same as I said before, that you're actually the well-wisher of them, then you're in that position. So, and what you may say, one of the points that we're going to come to next is You may not say everything. You may say, look, you've got to become vegetarian. Or you've got to give up drinking tea. Or you've got to, you know, whatever the thing is. You've got to come this next step. Really, you should be over there. Like, you know, Vidura didn't say, you should become Paramahansa. He didn't say that. You should go the next step. So that's also one of the qualifications of a trusting relationship is the person, I mean, you know the person, you know your audience. So you tell them the appropriate thing for that person to go further. And since you've helped them make other little steps, and they, through your association, they've been able to make those other steps, they can go the next step. And each of us, so that's you too, but each of us have some relationships with persons, and we're trying to go further in our Krishna consciousness. I think that, you know, the strong language part should be used very sparingly. But some language, because it's the point that Prabhupada has made in the earlier purports, is the voice of Vidura was the voice of compassion. The strongness was there because it was the only thing that would work. So one can certainly speak kindly and gently, and that may produce the result that's wanted, and strong language may produce the opposite result, breaking of that trust. Or at least, you know, scaring the person away. But it takes an understanding of that relationship that you have with that person, or at least what their quality is. The quality may be that a person is, I know people like this, that there's not, I don't have a lot of dealing with them, but I know that they're very honest with themselves, so you can speak honestly with them. So it takes knowing the quality of the person along with knowing what that would be, the strength of that relationship. Does that help?
I'm just drinking water.
Anything else? Coconut, you got something? Your voice is very soft. A little louder.
That a Vidura person should go and when he is doing this, go and do his body.
Okay. The part that you're referring to is, I think, it's a religious duty which Dhritarashtra can connect with. That at the final stage of life, rather than remaining attached like Ajamil, for example, die on his deathbed with relatives surrounding and coughing, and you know, the reaching out for the hand of the relative, you know, dying in that way, just attached on the platform of the body, as if the shelter of my relatives and my son and my wealth is going to save me from this cruel death. So that's to be avoided. And what's to be accepted? I mean, there are higher things than this. But minimally, for the religious person, the indication is you go quietly and with detachment from all these worldly comforts, you give up your body in that condition, in a holy place. Let go of the body and the attachments of the body to other things, and fix your mind on the destination. The ultimate leaving of the body for one who is a sannyasi might be different, and the way of leaving the body for Paramahamsa might be different, but they're all in the category of detachment. Like how Prabhupada gave up his body as a Paramahamsa is a different example. He showed by example how he went to Vrindavan and he surrounded himself with the chanting of the holy name. It's actually quite a common experience for those who live in Vrindavan, because many people go to Vrindavan. They watch many people die, and they know how to create an atmosphere where not attachment to the body and bodily relatives, but in strengthening the attachment to Krishna is enhanced in a maximum way. Many glorious stories like that, even contemporary. Personalities. And one who takes, one of the important factors in all of this is one who takes that step, for a devotee to take that step of fully depending on Krishna at the time of leaving the body. So one thing, it's dependent upon one's success at that is dependent upon one's ability of doing the same during this life, when there is strength and vigor and the opportunity to forget Krishna and just enjoy things in forgetfulness. But another is, persons speak like this, that even if their practice in Krishna consciousness was not like that of Prabhupada, but you know, say something much less of practice, but Krishna's reciprocation is so strong. Even when when people are dying, they're bodies start breaking down. When the body starts breaking down, it's very painful. Even something little breaks down in our setup, it's painful. It hurts here or there or something. So when death comes, it's very painful. But if one can fix one's mind on the real ultimate purpose, somehow, without painkillers and all that other kind of stuff, Krishna reciprocates with that devotee and just lifts them up above that condition. It was 2 summers ago. I won't get into the whole story. I watched somebody dying 2 summers ago, and they weren't the best of sadhakas by any means. They were the kind of person that for years and years and years and years and years, they used to come to the temple, and hardly did they chant. They weren't strict in their anything. But they were attached, and somehow they were attached to Krishna, attached to Prabhupada. And they got notice that they had cancer, acute, whatever it's called, stage of cancer. And there's lots of details to the story, but they made up their mind. They're not going to go the route of chemotherapy and all that business. This is it. Death's notice has come. I'm going to fix my mind completely on Krishna. And they were so determined to do that. And they accomplished that. There are so many things that happened that showed they actually did that. The last time I spent time with this devotee, he had 2 kinds of cancer, and one of them was cancer that was destroying his nervous system. I forget what it's called. But because his nervous system was gone, he lost all his motor functions. He couldn't swallow. He couldn't do anything. He couldn't. And slowly by slowly, it's like the description of what happens when you take poison. The limbs of the body just stop functioning. So he lost all motor functions and even all sensation in his body. But when I went to be with him and to chant, it was very clear. His mind was working. His auditory system was working, and his light was on. And we chanted, and the only thing he could do with his was move his 2 fingers of his right hand. So when the kirtan started, the tempo started picking up, 2 fingers of his right hand were moving like this. And I was thinking, if he could dance, he'd be dancing. His heart was completely into it, and he couldn't move his head, but he up on the ceiling because he was on his back. He had different pictures put up, and you could see his eyes were fixed on one picture, and then they would move to another. So that's all he could do. Light was on, his eyes could move, and he can move two fingers of his right hand. That was it. But he was determined. You can imagine how much pain his body was in. No sign of, he transcended the pain. Body thinking of Krishna no matter what. His friends wanted to come see him, said no, because they weren't devotees. But I don't want to have somebody not reminding me of Krishna coming here. They couldn't understand it. They were a little upset about it. But he was, I'm not going to be deviated for 1 second from Krishna thought. Completely determined. Incredible. Krishna helps us. Krishna certainly helps us. And we make deep commitments to go to Krishna. Krishna makes enormous amounts of steps to help us accomplish that. Then is the, so in this chapter, the interesting dynamic, there's one more that's going to come up, and that's Narada comes to take care of Sanjaya and Yudhisthira. Another sadhu enters into the cast of characters. First it's Maitreya, then it's Vidura, then it's Narada. But to get to that stage, like this Bhakta Richard, to get to that stage, he had Prabhupada's association. He didn't take initiation from Prabhupada, he didn't take initiation from anyone. But he had deep faith in Prabhupada and faith in Krishna, and kind of so-so in his practices. But he had the mercy of a sadhu. So how important that is. And like Donna Kelly's question, how can someone who's carrying that message that a sadhu has given effectively give that to others? It's a great challenge to do that. One of the things is we have to really want to do it very, very, the missionary, the spirit of compassion on behalf of the Supreme Lord is necessary, and being very, very careful in how to do it nicely is another very important, having that concern for the other person. Not just take the sledgehammer and smash them, but have the effect come out the way that it's supposed to come out. Anything else? No? Okay, so Hare Krishna. I have our team. Srila Prabhupada.
Jai. Jai.